Four decades ago, Buies Creek was a hotbed for developing some of the nation's best multi-sport track athletes. Leanne Plum arrived in Buies Creek in the summer of 1982 after earning 12 All-State honors and 2 Florida Prep Track and Field State Championships. By the time she graduated 4 years later, Leanne had earned All-America honors 3 times at Campbell. Her school records in the heptathlon and javelin still stand 40 years later. But Leanne didn't just compete in track. She also played varsity tennis and ran cross country and was involved in a number of activities during her time in the creek. She went on to become one of the nation's best cyclists, taught high school literature, and ran a business that ran guided fly fishing and hunting activities. It's no surprise that in 2004, Leanne was inducted into the Campbell Athletics Hall of Fame. My name is Stan Cole, class of 1987, and this is our next installment of Tales from the Creek, where we visit with the people who've made this place special over the years. I'm delighted to be joined today by Campbell Hall of Fame member and All-American Leanne Plum Mann. Welcome to Tales from the Creek, Leanne, and thanks for taking the time to visit with us.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for the invitation.
Leanne, let's just start at the beginning. Tell us a little bit about growing up in Florida, your family, and how you got your start in sports.
Well, I grew up in a little town called Palmetto, and lived in a neighborhood with a whole bunch of boys and just got into sports. My family was outdoor people, and we lived on the Manatee River, and so everything kind of happened there and in the neighborhood with, over the years, 18 boys coming through the neighborhood. And we just had my grandparents had a big yard. We had a big yard, and so everybody gathered at our place and played pickle and tackle football and ping pong and anything else you can think of. So it was a fun kind of quintessential little childhood, I would say.
Outside of playing football, baseball, whatever you were doing, what right there on the river, tell us a little bit. You grew up on the water, I guess.
Yep, we did. We had my grandfather had built a boat basin, and when they moved down from the Chicago area, and he built a boat, and we had davits, and we had a little Boston Whaler we used to buzz around the river in, and we had prams and laser sailboats and catamarans, and so we just spent, everything was all the time. It was either we were fishing or skiing or whatever we were doing out there. And so we would, the river there is about a mile wide, and we're about 2 miles from the mouth of the river where it opens up into Tampa Bay. So it's a really diverse, I guess it's just a really diverse area. When we would go fishing, you would take 5 or 6 different rods because you might be out on the pilings at the Skyway Bridge, or you might be in the mangroves, or you might be on the flats, or you might, so you use different equipment. And so it was always just something going on.
What was your favorite way to, what's your favorite way to fish? What tackle do you like to use?
Well, there we use a lot of, back then I used just a lot of light tackle. My brothers liked to go offshore a whole bunch, and I just never, I guess I really just never had time for that. I'm like, no, I don't have time for that. But, always light tackle. And then I got into fly fishing. I came home, it's crazy. I came home from Campbell one, summer, I guess, maybe it was my freshman year or something. I came home and one of our neighbors was out in my grandmother's yard casting. And I'm like, what the heck are you doing? And so I'm like, what kind of fishing is that? And so I got in on the fly fishing lessons. And so I started fly fishing then, and became a guide later on, and really have enjoyed fly fishing up here. But I do a lot of fly fishing now, even in saltwater, which is kind of fun. But when we go to the beach, I do a lot of surf fishing. That's about what I really like to do.
That's my favorite thing, because it doesn't matter if the fish are biting or not. You can still have a great time just sitting there watching the waves come in.
You can. And it's good. And you keep an eye on everything. You get to talk to folks coming by, and everybody wants to know what you've caught, or if you haven't caught anything, what you're doing wrong. And well, have you tried a squid, or have you tried a shrimp, or
so. Leanne, you mentioned growing up around 18 boys. I guess that includes your older brothers. Did that environment help cultivate your competitive nature?
Oh, I would say so. Yeah, it was constant. You know, we were always in competition with one another, or we were having fun, or we were just on the river, or we were building forts, or we were having mud fights, or we were, you know, you're just doing stuff. And my girlfriends would, when they could come in on the weekends, we would, they would join in. And, but it's, I think, having that kind of competitive, my, they weren't super competitive, my brothers, but I think we were kind of instilled with our parents that you always kind of do your best and you always kind of dive in and you always try real hard and you'd never give up and you're not supposed to quit things that you start. And so I think that had a lot to do with, I think I was born with my competitive nature, but I think the qualities that my parents instilled in us really fostered a really good competitive and no quit kind of attitude.
What, when did you get your start kind of in organized sports? What was the, where did you start them?
Yeah, we had, my mom kind of, she brought in strays a lot. And, there, we had some boys that over the years that she, you know, maybe they came from a bad home situation or whatever. And so they would stay with us. And one, guy's name's Terry West, and he lives in Bradenton, and I'm sure he still owns some school records down there, but he was really into track and field. And he was, so when I came up through sports, I went to some private schools when I was younger and they didn't have a lot of sport. And so when I got into eighth grade, there was an opportunity to go to the public school, which had all these different sports. And I've been playing tennis growing up, not a lot of tournament tennis, rarely tournament tennis, just played a lot of stuff. And, but, anyway, it was kind of neat because he fostered this kind of thing. Hey, I ran track and you get to do all these different events. And so we would go to these meetups, I guess they were, at the junior college. Back then it was Manatee Junior College. Mm-hmm. And, you could go there on the weekends and you could enter whatever events you wanted to enter. And they didn't limit the number of events that you could get into. And so you were able to just try everything. And so in eighth grade, we weren't allowed to play on the varsity team, but we were allowed to, you know, they would allow us to compete in the event, but we weren't scored. And so that was really nice that I was able to get into track a little bit in eighth grade and then move on into track later on. And then I played a little bit of tennis. We weren't allowed to play two sports during a season. So it was usually cross country in the fall and basketball in the winter, and then track and tennis and church league softball in the spring or wherever.
You mentioned playing tackle football in the yard. I mean, we all used to do that. I guess, you know, we were both children of the 70s, and we didn't think about broken limbs and little things like that. Who are some of your favorite players? What your favorite teams?
Oh yeah, right. So the Miami Dolphins, of course, you know. And so I was 8 years old when they won the 72 Super Bowl, mm-hmm. And so I was a huge fan. And I couldn't do it today, but Dad used to, when his buddies would come over, they would be like, who's plays third string on the line, the guard, who's the right guard? I'm like, oh, that's so-and-so. And so I could name like the whole roster, you know how kids are when they get into something. And so, but no, my helmet and my jersey was number 42, Paul Warfield. And he was my favorite guy. And I always liked being the wide receiver. So, but it was, we wore pads and the whole bit and knocked each other out and, you know, that kind of stuff. But it was kind of fun because all the boys were, most of the neighborhood boys were big. My brothers are 6'3 and 6'6. And some of the boys across the street were 6'4, 6'5, 6'3. You know, they're all big. And so it was, if any one of those guys got the ball, it was usually this big gang tackle where you had to, you know, somebody would be holding onto a leg, another one would be holding onto a neck, you know, and then they just drag you all the way into the end zone. So it was a lot of fun. And so we just, we usually played in the neighbor's yard, and they had a concrete walkway that went to the front door that was one goal line. And then there was a prickly bush, like at the other end, there was a tree, and that was a goal line. So if you went like 5 yards too deep, you went into the holly. And if you fell down on the goal line going the other way, it was a concrete pad, you know? So it was we usually started going across the street to my grandmother's yard after that, because it was kind of like, it was a little painful.
Yeah, that sounds kind of like an extreme sport adventure there.
It was, you know, yeah.
So I can certainly relate to when young kids get into something. I was a Baltimore Colts fan, still am. So I hadn't had a team since 1984. And, but, you know, I joke with folks that I can tell you the starting lineup on both sides of the ball from the 75 Colts, but I can't remember why I walked in the room these days. But it's funny the things that stick in your head. Leanne, you shared a story with me earlier about how maybe you developed some of your survival skills or something like that when you your brothers would take you out on the boat. You've got to share that story with our listeners. My God.
Well, of course, we had a dock that went out, and so we would get up, crack of dawn on Saturday mornings, and I usually was up at about 6, and I would go downstairs, and this is when I was, 10, 11, 12 years old, mm-hmm. and take my little double mint sleeping bag and go downstairs, get a bowl of cereal, and watch cartoons, and then when everybody else got up, it was, we'd go out to the boat and just load it up and go skiing, and usually, things went off without any problems whatsoever. But occasionally when the boys didn't want their little tomboy sister around, we'd be out in the, and the river's about a mile wide there. And they would, somewhere along the path going out to the bay, I'd get tossed out of the boat. And so, and it was like, okay, well, if I'm closer to the Bradenton side, I'll swim over to Jack Manson's house and he'll bring me back, or I can borrow his canoe or his windsurfer or some way and get back home. If it was farther down, out towards the Gulf, then usually there were some sandbars around and you could kind of get back to shore and then just walk home. And so it was really funny. We were sitting around, I don't know how long it's been. It's probably been about 4 or 5 years ago. We were all sitting around the table telling stories at Thanksgiving, and this topic came up and they started talking about it. And I said, yeah, golly. And we were reliving it. My brother was like, ha ha ha. And I was the same way too. My mom's like, 90 years old. And she's like, I have never heard this story. And I'm like, why didn't you tell me? I'm like, well, you can't tattle. If you tattle, you don't ever get taken back out in the boat again, And so it was, you just live and learn and, go, but they were funny. It never really bothered me. It was just like, I'll just go swim back. The dog is at the end of the dock waiting on me. And, I'll get back in there and I'll go do something else until they get home. So
that's a priceless story there. Leanne, I understand you spent a lot of time in North Carolina during the summers in your childhood and your youth. Share a little bit about that with us.
Well, we had the privilege of being able to go to Camp Chimney Rock in Chimney Rock, North Carolina. We had the owner at the time, her name was Barbara Rankin, and she was from Atlanta, and ended up being a close family friend. But she would come down and tour Florida and do groups and show, slideshows and that type of thing. So I really wanted to go to camp, and I was only 8, and they wouldn't take you if you were younger than 9. But then my brother Kurt, who's my 2 years older than I am, mom said, well, if her brother goes with her, can she go? And so it was like, yeah, great. So off we go to, 2 weeks of camp, because that's really all they were going to let me go. And so we get up to Buies Creek, and they put us on a bus. We're all these other kids, and went up to, had this big bus ride up there. And at 2 weeks, they called, and I'm like, I'm not coming home. I'm staying. And Kurt, wanted to go home. And so then it was a third week, and then it was going to turn into a fourth week. And it was really funny. I didn't know they were coming, but my mom and her mother had driven all the way up from Palmetto to Lake Lure, to get me, like, you are coming home. You can't stay here any longer. And so I stayed I went to that camp for either 4 or 8 weeks my whole childhood until I was 16. And mom and dad had a place over in Maggie Valley briefly. We had some dear friends that, we went over there a lot. We were in Waynesville. We went to Boone to ski. And so Western North Carolina really became a very familiar place for me to visit. We had some relatives in Winston-Salem. We had some friends in Highlands. And so all of that area was, it was always hiking and fishing and, camping and that type of thing. And that's what really encouraged me. I didn't want to go to, I love North Carolina so much. I had so many great memories. I had no desire to go to college in Florida. You know, I wanted to go to a school in North Carolina. And I think I was going to have to go to the junior college. And I got a phone call, I think in July, to go to that got an offer from Campbell.
Wow. So, July, right, before your freshman, before you started a month later.
I think it was like June or July. It was really late because we didn't graduate. Well, maybe it was in June because we graduated in June down there. Right. So that was probably could have been a June time. And so anyway, North Carolina was just, I think I just held out. I was just waiting for a phone call or waiting for something to pop up or, but it was, you know, it was okay that the junior college had a track team. I had some offers in Florida, but I didn't want to go to a Florida school. My brothers went to Florida and Florida State and, you know, there's all that stuff going on and I just would rather have been somewhere else.
Well, you know, 12 all-state honors, two state titles, you know, did you have to initiate the recruiting situation? How did you find out about Campbell? How did Campbell find out about you?
Well, this is a good story. So I don't really know what happened, but I do know what happened. It's just, I don't know what the mechanism was, but I know that my coach, who is Coach Jay Goolsby back then, he was our head coach. And the recruiting process, you know, was quite a bit different in the early 80s and quite a bit different for girls with the sports and the limited, you know, access that there was. But it was great. And Campbell was just getting started, I guess, and with their programs. And anyway, he got a phone call. And so we were out of practice or something. And he said, you know, I got a phone call from this coach and at Campbell University. I'm like, I have no idea what that is. And he said, they thought that they were calling Palmetto High School in Miami, Florida.
How about that?
So they had a heptathlon in the state championships. Like I usually did five events at the state meet. And so I guess it was a little bit after that, they had an invitation to athletes that, okay, come to this other event. We're just going to do the heptathlon, the decathlon. And so this girl, and I don't remember her name, but she was from Palmetto High School down near Miami. And she ran, like a 42 or a 43 second 330 hurdles back then.
Wow.
And I ran like a 47, you know, so they were calling her. And then they got my coach and he's like, no, let me tell you about this. Let me tell you about this girl. She just doesn't run hurdles. She does everything, you know, and started talking to them about me. And then, you know, that worked out. And then it was kind of like, okay, we want to offer you a scholarship. We want you to come to Campbell University. And I was like all in from the beginning. I didn't know where I was going. I just knew I was going to North Carolina and I knew I was going to be able to run track. So.
Leanne, did you know that you wanted to compete in the heptathlon when you came, or were you coming to do whatever?
No, it was really nice because of the course. I probably, you know, I don't remember the whole conversation, but I'm sure I talked to Coach Tolsma and I'm sure he said, you know, we know you were doing these other events. We know you did the state heptathlon. I don't remember what I placed, but I mean, I did pretty well, but then that turned into, oh, well, you're going to be a multi-sport, you know, a multi-event athlete. And that really appealed to me as well. I never focused on one event ever. You know, we would do relays or we would do hurdles or we would do high jump or, you know, I just did anything the coaches, you know, needed for the day. It was like, okay, you're going to throw discus today or shot put or whatever. So I think it just fit really well. And with Brant's expertise and this multi, you know, so Orville was there and Ernie was there. And then I guess the next year Delethia Quarles came. And so there was a little core of people that were already doing multi events. And but then there was we had a lot of sprinters there too. And some came from Florida from schools that I knew down here in the Tampa Bay area.
Right. Salwyn Parker, known as Pip, Willie Parker. Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned Orville Peterson and Ernie White, Delethia Quarles. Did y'all kind of all work together and help out each other a little bit, or what did you pick up from those guys?
Good friendship, you know. It was I think it was, for me, it was practices were hard, but they were always fun. I remember Ernie and I would go out and we did a lot of weighted throws for javelin. He was a really nice javelin thrower as well. And so we would go out and we would throw golf balls, and we would throw them from one end of the, you know, the track out there. It was, we would throw, got to where we could throw a golf ball the whole length of that field. Right. And we worked at it, but then we also got into a really bad habit of finding things that were left out in the field and doing target practice. And so we would go throw in the javelins, trying to see how close we could get. And, you know, there was one time I was thinking about this. There were a pair of shoes out there. And so we started throwing at the shoes. Well, I can't remember if Ernie hit it or I hit it, but one of us put a hole in that shoe, and it happened to be a brand new pair of Brant's running shoes. So he wasn't particularly happy with us putting a hole in his, you know, his nice new runners. So, but we used to do stuff like that. So the workouts were hard. They were fun. They were eclectic. I think that Brant, he was always experimenting, you know, with cross training or overspeed training or strength training, or we were in the pool a lot. So I think that there was a good deal of, you know, hard work plus pool work or something to take the, you know, to have a different type of training, to do some type of cross training. And so I think that that's what did it the most. It was fun. We would run out at Keith Hills. We'd run through campus. But it was always, I don't ever remember it not being fun, I guess, and not, you know, knowing that I had teammates. I mean, you always have something go on through the years, but I think that the best thing was that those friendships were during that time in college were important.
Leanne, heptathlon, 7 events over 2 days, 100 meter hurdles, high jump, shot put, 200 meter dash, long jump, javelin throw, 800 meter run. Two prong question here. What's your favorite event, and what was the most difficult for you?
I was best at the javelin in the half mile. So right. Usually I was lagging behind. The heptathlon is really a sprint event. Mm-hmm. I've always felt like they should put a 1500 in there or something. Right. Because any sprinter can really hold on for a decent time in an 800 meter. So it really is weighted towards, you know, people that have explosive speed. So the 100, the hurdles, the 200 meter, the long jump, the high jump. And so I did pretty well in the high jump. I was usually, you know, around 5.5, 5.6 or something like that. So I would hold my own pretty much, but I would get, you know, you're timed, or you're either timed and get your points, or your distances and you get points. And so I might not be as fast in the 100 meters or as long in the long jump, but I do okay in the, and I did well in the, I had good upper body strength, and I was a good shot putter. So I would usually make up ground in the shot put. But my junior year, I was in 13th place at nationals before the javelin. And I ended up finishing second. And so a lot of girls, they don't have a good arm. And so they're out there, they've got all these speed events, but then they throw 110 feet or 105 feet or something like that. And then they can run a, you know, 2.5 minute half mile. So that's where I really made up my distance. So I of course, I did better in those events, so I liked them better.
Now, in addition to competing in track, you also ran cross country, you know, and for a while you played on the tennis team, unheard of these days. And especially when, if your track events, you know, your multi events focused on shorter distances, you know, cross country is more, you know, 5K, 5 miles, whatever you were running at the time. Tell us a little bit about your time on the tennis courts and running on the cross country trails.
Well, tennis was fun. My roommate was I think the first year was Carol Stanley, mm-hmm. and she played number one on the team. And so we would go out and, of course, you know, we just hit around and we were doing pickup games and that kind of stuff. And so I guess at some point along the way, they needed an extra person for, you know, fall tennis. And mm-hmm. I was asked to play on the team. And so I did and, you know, was able to contribute that way because it didn't. You didn't have a problem with maybe getting injured, you know, if you're playing basketball or some other sport. So I think that was okay. The tennis, I think it kept me engaged. I really did not like, I'm much better when I have too much on my plate. I'm much more, you know, and if I have too much time to lounge around, I don't get any much done. But so that was really great. You know, I met a whole nother group of people there. And then, of course, cross country, we were only running a 5K back then. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't too incredibly painful. And I didn't like the long distance stuff. I didn't like, you know, any of the 10-mile runs. But I don't remember doing much of that in college. I remember, you know, shorter runs with more intensity and more speed training and that type of stuff. And there was a couple of Sandy ran number one, and I think I was either two or three, and I enjoyed it. The ones that I hated the most were the ones around the golf course, because you feel like you're not getting anywhere. And then the best courses were, we had a course down in Charleston. It was through some kind of park, and it was mm-hmm. almost all on trails. And wow. That's those two times that we ran there, I ran my best times, because it was just, you know, it was this real fast trail and you're moving, I don't know, it's just had a lot of energy to it. So trail running was I really enjoyed that a lot more than just the cross country component. But, you know, it was a really good way to build a foundation for the year for the end of the season. When you're getting into track, you're already building that base, and then you mm-hmm. can work off of that for the season.
Our guest today on Tales from the Creek is former Campbell All-American and Hall of Fame member LeAnn Plum Mann. LeAnn, outside of, you know, athletics, what are some of your better memories from your time in Buies Creek?
Oh, gosh. I have a lot. I remember there was a girl across the hall, and I cannot pull up her name. She was a big New York Jets fan. Okay. And you know how the Jets love the Dolphins. Oh, and so yeah. During football season, it was always fun. But she... I remember she kind of got the Michael Jackson album came out, mm-hmm. Thriller came out at some point, and she was a really good dancer. And mm-hmm. so she got the whole hallway to do that, the Thriller dance. And it was, yeah, that whole thing. And it was, and of course I'm horrible at dancing, but you know, these girls, a lot of them were cheerleaders and that kind of stuff. And they know how to do all that choreography and everything, but you know, that was fun. I had a car, cause I was from Florida. Mm-hmm. So I was always getting hit up, you know, to do this or that and take folks around, which I didn't mind. I enjoyed my courses. I enjoyed being in the English department. I really didn't know what I wanted to major in when I came, and communications, I just kind of fell into that. I liked that world. And then at the time, the communications was under the umbrella of the English department. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I was able to work in the English department. I had a lot of good friends in the English department Tom Poston and Dr. Vaughn and Dr. Richardson and who were we talking about the other day from Mount Olive?
Miss Dorothy Whitley was my Ms. Whitley. She was my advisor back then.
She was fabulous. She's like the best grammar English teacher I ever had. I had one really good one in high school, and then she really polished me off. I really felt like I didn't like her 200-word sentences, but that's okay.
That was a tough assignment, but and I was probably, that might have been the most satisfied I was when I was able to knock off that assignment in the advanced writing course that we were required to take for that major. I never thought I would get it, to begin with, but you know, sometime before midterm, I think I finally did. I think we had to turn it in every week until you got that part checked off, as I recall. And it took me a month or more to get that one behind me.
And then we were talking about that geology course that I love so much. I wish I could have taken another one and had to knock that science out, you know, because I wasn't going to do statistics or chemistry or any of that kind of stuff. But I needed something to major in that I didn't have to add things up or measure stuff, you know.
I used to joke and say that I needed something that I could talk my way out of. And you can't in science and math. There's no way to talk your way out of it. That's really for sure. Leanne, did you know you wanted to major in English? Were you a reader?
I was a big reader. Yeah, I was a really big reader. And then I think I took the basic courses, you know, my freshman year, and I really just really gravitated towards, okay, this is something that I can do. Cause it was kind of some business courses and things like that. And that just didn't really, turn me on at all. And some of the courses I think I was kind of scared of, like statistics and you know, things like that. I just thought, well, I'm just not going to be able to, that's just not in my wheelhouse. But I like we did some writing in high school, and I got some really nice feedback at times on my writing. And so I think then I started doing more of it at Campbell, and then had people around that also like to read and like to, you know, the history was really important to me. English is important to me. Those types. And I think it's just, I went in the communication department and it's kind of like, well, golly, this is kind of neat. And we did some of the, I didn't do any radio on campus, but I did like an internship at a TV station down in Fayetteville. So all of those things, I think, just kind of added up that, oh, well, this is what feels right. This is where I need to be. And this is where I'm comfortable. And I'm actually okay, decent at it. And then my first job out of college was over at WEEB Radio over in Southern Pines. So that was kind of fun. That was a sales job. So, and we wrote some copy, but most of the time. But no, I think you just kind of fall in with some folks too, or maybe you have a mentor or somebody that you've met that kind of pushes you or helps you define where you want to go.
Leanne, back when we were in school, maybe it was inspired by the movie Breaking Away, but there was a campus activities every year. Hosted what they called the Little 500 bicycle race around Buies Creek. Tell us a little bit about how you got involved in that. And was that your gateway to racing bicycles after graduation?
Oh, yeah. So I think Sandy and I, of course, ran cross country. And I can't remember his last name. His first name is Marion. Mm-hmm. And Marion, I guess we must have been in the weight room or something like that. And he knew we were on the track team. And so he asked us if we would be the girls on his little 500 team. And we were like, yeah. And I had a bike. I don't remember. I guess Sandy may have used my bike because you could swap off. So we did that. And he was already a racer. He was like a category 4 racer and really encouraged us and, you know, coached us up on how to do this or that. And anyways, I didn't go ride 10 miles all the time, but then we started riding longer rides instead of just around campus. And anyway, we ended up being on that team, and I think we won like 3 years in a row. Like, we were undefeated. And Sandy and I, you know, contributed but then I think I got curious about bike racing because of Marion and started talking to him more about USPTA, was it USPTA? No, US Cycling Association. How you get into that? How do you race? And so he was, helpful in telling me a little bit more about it. And then I had a really dear old friend that knew a guy that coached cyclists and down in Florida. And so I got in touch with him and started racing some races. And we invested, mom and dad helped me invest in a bike. And so the first race I got out there, we're in a Cat 4 race, and we ended up in a huge pile. So I had this the first race I was in, and my mom is just like, this is not good. This is, you know, and I mean, it was, I was bloody. I mean, people had their everything. My bike was messed up, and it was like, that was fun. Let's go. Let's, you know, let's see what this is all about. But it was just a big pile up the first race. It was funny, but it's, it took me all over the state too. You know, it's, I would, I think my senior year, I started trying to pair up where a race was when we could follow up at a cross country meet, or if we weren't all going together in a van and I could drive, then I would start going to some races. And so I ended up getting my license and, becoming a Cat 4 rider. And I think track and field and that competitive part, you know, I had the conditioning. I just didn't have as much quote unquote street smarts, you know, about, tactics and things like that, but moved up pretty quickly. But I think that, yeah, of course it's that, all those experiences. And then they had a, they had a triathlon on campus that was, I did, and it was, oh, that was going to be so much fun. And golly, we had cross country season, so I don't have to run to train. I can just swim, practice swimming and riding my bike. And so I got in the pool, we swam, and I, Chris Black, I think it's from Tavernier, Florida.
Right.
He got out of the pool first. I got out of the pool behind him. We got on our bikes and took off. And when we came in, I kind of skidded out, and we were like together, but he was ahead of me. And then we got out there, we had to run 6 miles, and somewhere around halfway out on some dirt road that we were on, I just totally bonked. Like there's nothing left in the tank. And I think it took me, almost 60 minutes to do 6 miles. Yeah. So everybody's coming by me and they're like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm just fine. I just can't do it anymore. So those kinds of things, you know, that's the fun stuff I was talking about, that you get to do all this sports stuff, but you have these folks that come, you know, you're come through in your life and you remember who they are. You remember some phone times but that certainly helped me get into cycling.
And your cycling career just took off. You participated in the U.S. Olympic cycling trials in both 88 and 92. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Well, 92 was, I think I only did one event, but in 88, the track, so on the velodrome was it, they were in Redmond, Washington, mm-hmm. and then the road racing was in Spokane.
Right.
And so, that was kind of neat. You know, I was already traveling out that way. And, I stayed with my brother out in California. My mom came out and we did Yosemite and some other things, and it was able to ride all over the place out there. But, that Washington, I'd never been to Spokane before, and, cycling had taken me to Seattle. It's a totally different landscape. And, so that was, they did at the time, I don't know if they do it the same way anymore, but they had the national championships out there. And mm-hmm. you raced in one road race. And if you were in the top 80, I believe, then you went into the trials. Mm-hmm. And then there were two trial races that was a circuit race. And that was the road racing. We also had time trials. So that you would ride, you know, your 25 mile time trial. And then on the track, you know, I did separate events. I did the kilo, and we did the points race, which is a multi mass start race that you earn points, you know, like every 10 laps, you'll sprint for points, or every 5 laps, you'll sprint for points. And so, I mean, I did well in those events, but I think that they take the top three in the road racing, and I think they only took one or two in the track events back then. Mm-hmm. And then the time trial, I think, was maybe one or two people. And so like in the time trial, I think I was in the top 20, 17 or something like that. The points race, I think I was like third or fourth. So missed that. And then the road race, I think I was in the top 50 for the national championships. And then that year, and then I was in the top 20s in the Olympic trial races. But you know, I was in there, I was ranked pretty high for a number of years, but it's rarefied atmosphere up there with these girls that are really, really good, you know. Wow. So, yeah, I enjoyed it. We did a lot of we did a USA versus USSR back then. We did a races at the Velodrome up in Trexler Town, Pennsylvania. There's a really nice velodrome there near Allentown. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so those events were always interesting and fun, and got to ride on the Olympic track down here in Atlanta before they actually paved it. He used to have a tree growing up in the middle of it, which was kind of funny. But cycling, it took me, you know, all over the country, and I was able to go out to the Olympic Training Center and spend a lot of time out there at Colorado Springs. And so, yeah, it was a good career. I really enjoyed it. And I didn't do much better than that. So, but it was fun.
So take us through a little bit, you know, briefly of your career path, what you've been doing since.
Okay. Well, I moved back to, well, it was funny because when I decided that I wasn't going to race anymore, I was going to just take a break. And then I said, no, it's time to get a job. And so I moved to, it was funny. I had a really good friend that ran the, called the Florida House in Washington, D.C. And so some of the, you know, they'll have a house where Floridians can come to and do business and that kind of thing. And so I thought, well, I'm going to go to Washington, D.C. I'm going to work on Capitol Hill. And so I had a buddy of mine that actually had a place. It was an old childhood friend that had a, he was in the FBI, and he worked on, what's her name? He worked on one of the big people's detail. I'm trying to remember who it was. But so I stayed with him for a couple weeks. I said, okay, I'm going to give myself 2 weeks to find a job on Capitol Hill. So got with this friend of mine, and he, in one of the offices of Bill Nelson, he's a representative from the Space Coast of Florida. He's the NASA guy in the administration. But anyway, so I got a job in his office. I was the little front desk, little peon person. And the reason I got the job is because Davis, my friend, he wanted me to play in a softball game with him. And all the Capitol Hill people play against, you know, different offices play against each other. And so I went to a softball game, and they're kind of like, I think it was more that they needed somebody that was a softball player more than they needed somebody that was at the front desk, because they needed somebody that was a ringer, because you had to have a couple of girls on your team. And right. So I think I actually got the job because I played softball, not because of my expertise as a front desk person. But it was great. And he was running for governor. So he had a very short term while I was there. And he was running against Lawton Smith. And Lawton won that year, but you had to step down as a congressman, you know, if you ran for a different office.
Right.
And so I was there about a year. And Washington, D.C. was just a great town. It was a really great sports town. Mm-hmm. I played on, I think, three different softball teams and one football team that was all co-ed stuff. And there were two female teams I played on and then one mixed softball team. So, you know, you were either working hard or playing hard, or you had the Smithsonian's, you had everything ran out. I rode my bike everywhere, which was great. And there's so anyway, that ended, and I interviewed with Sam Nunn's office, and they offered me a job, but I was kind of like, you know, I want to move back to Florida. So I moved back home, started working for my family's business, and I bought a little house. And then in 1993, I met my husband, and he's from Rome, Georgia, and we dated for a while, and then we got married and moved to Rome, Georgia. And I came up here and got back into education. I've worked at, during the Olympics, I worked for Swatch, which was kind of fun. And, then moved to Rome. Well, I was already in Rome, but, managed a recreation. They were just starting a new rec department. And so I got on board with them and was managing a new facility. And then through that, I moved back into education, and, which I had done some teaching in Florida. I had, subbed a lot, but I had a license down there for teaching. And then, so that translated up here, but I started teaching at St. Mary's Catholic school, which is, it was a little middle school, and they needed another English person in there. They had a grammar teacher, and they needed a grammar and literature or language arts. So I worked there for a year, and then went over to Darlington School, which is a private day and boarding school here in Rome, Georgia. And it's a was founded in, I don't know, it's over 100 years old. And so we have a lot of international kids. We have a lot of domestic and international boarding students. And I was there for 15 years and was able to teach in the English department. I was the director of the golf and tennis academies. So we got those started in conjunction with a club here, is Coosa Country Club. And so we did that. And then I directed summer programs for 6 years. And just what I liked about independent schools was they allow you to wear a lot of hats. So it kept my interest, and wearing a lot of hats is hard sometimes, but it's also, it's very interesting and fun. And the diversity of folks that I would be able to get to meet during the summer. And we brought a lot of international kids in for the golf and tennis academies. We have a very, very good soccer academy there too. And that's what started it all, is Chad Little is the director of that. And he started that soccer academy. And then we were able to go through that, start a tennis academy and start, you know, the golf academy. But yeah, that got me into it. And I had a great career there. And I have a lot of friends that are still at Darlington and live around this community that, that are great folks.
Now, and you also ran your own business where you were
I did.
Excursions for hunting and fly fishing. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, over the years, you know, I told you about the fly fishing thing. I got into, I opened a store, and it was an Orvis endorsed store. And so I was an Orvis endorsed fly fishing guide and shotgun instructor. And so that was really a lot of fun. So we would run trips on the rivers, the local rivers and up in Tennessee. And then I had the store. We partnered with some local resorts where we would do their mountain biking. We do their, we do foraging things. We take people out and go look for mushrooms and, or whatever, you know, and they would, they had horseback riding there. And so we partnered, we supplied their boats, their bikes, their, you know, the fishing equipment, any instruction they needed. So that was fun. And I did that until, you know, it just, I think I was just a minute before my time, but I think it was a good thing. I only did that for about 5 or 6 years. And then that was when I went back into the education kind of part. So I did that for a while. I really enjoyed it, but it, you just don't make a whole lot of money doing that. And you know, you're independent, you're by yourself. You're, so it was better. I think I miss kids. That's the biggest thing. I think that being around students and learning from them and them being able to learn from you and nurturing those relationships. Darlington was such a great place because they allowed us to start an outdoor club. So, you know, a couple of days a week, I would teach kids to fly fish. A couple of days a week, we would go shoot shotguns at sporting clays. And so we were able to do camping trips and just and there's a lot of, we're up here in a pretty rural area in North Georgia. And so there's a lot of kids that like, just love the outdoors. And so that part of it, getting back to, you know, taking that business and kind of going, okay, that chapter's over, let's move over here. And I think that's my passion, is the students and that connection that we have with them.
Now, understand, now you're still staying busy. You can't, that's your thing. But you've started a woodworking business.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I've always kind of dabbled in this stuff and artsy fartsy stuff. I'm making wind chimes, and I collect a lot of, I can't go to a beach without picking up driftwood and shells and things like that. So my mom did a lot of stained glass. And as she got older, she stopped doing the stained glass and started doing kiln work, where you melt the glass and you make different things out of it. And so we started, she would make lamps. We make Just all sorts of stuff. Just I'm looking in this room and there's things in here that she made. And so I started doing a lot of that with her, and it just kind of turned into, oh, well, we can make wind chimes out of this with a driftwood, and we can do this woodworking. And my brothers had a construction, excuse me. One of my brothers is a contractor, the one that used to throw me in the river, is a contractor in Tampa and owns a lumber mill. And so I'd just go there and I'd go through his piles and like, can I take this and all the leftovers? And I have a Mini Cooper and I'd fill that car up with wood. Like everybody says I need a truck, and I really do. But so that would come up with me, and I started making cutting boards, and I'd start carving spoons and, you know, just fun stuff. And we did some of that with the kids too. We would get some cherry and carve out the spoon, like the outline of it. And then we had the tools, the hand tools that you had to use to carve out the bowl and all that kind of stuff. So, and then I had kids, we would get the blanks and they'd glue up their cutting boards. And so that was all part of some of this outdoor stuff, that they learned how to just kind of create things on their own. And I was doing the same thing. And then I was able to come across a lot of wood recently. And now it's kind of even really turned into more of a business, because I'm wanting to sell more of it and I'm making more stuff. And I have two friends that have nice shops. And so I go to their shop and we call it piddling. We're going to piddle around, and I'm going to learn how to, I've got one of them. He's got a really nice, setup for, turning items, you know, wood turning. And I haven't done that yet. I really want to try that. I think it's very creative. Mm-hmm. So that, and then painting some more, and I've always had that artsy fartsy side. So it's been kind of nice to, you know, make a little business out of it. I've got my wares in a couple of different stores locally. And so, but most of it all started out with just making stuff to give away, you know, make coasters for Christmas presents or cutting boards and, you know, things like that, that were just nice. People like handmade stuff, and it means more, I think. And so I think I give away more than I sell, but I have some stores that like the stuff, and so they sell it for me. So it's fun.
Leanne, in 2004, you were inducted into the Campbell Athletics Hall of Fame. What does that honor mean to you?
I think I'm proud of it. I wasn't sure I was. It was kind of funny when you get this call so long after you've graduated, and you're kind of like, oh, well, that's kind of cool. And so my mom came with me and my husband came with me, and Orville was there. And I think that made it more special, is that it was really cool to be inducted with an old friend. And we were able to catch up and ride in the back of the little convertibles and that kind of thing. But I think it's, I don't know how connected I would feel to Campbell if that hadn't have happened. You know, because I think, being from Florida and going to school up there and then going all over the country. And I think Campbell was a special place for me, because for me, it would not have worked for me to go to a large school. Mm-hmm. It was just the perfect place. You know, I came out of a high school where we had, I think, 100, 110 in our graduating class. And so to be able to come to a place like Campbell that was small, it's like a family in a lot of ways. And I think that there's, I think with all my sports and going on, I didn't make a lot of close friends, but I have a very, very warm feeling about the friends I made, the experiences I had, the professors I had, the size of the classes were perfect. And I think that I probably wouldn't think about, I think I would think about Campbell, but I don't know if I would have the same depth of feeling about Campbell if I weren't in the hall. I think that there's something real special about being a part of an institution in another way and having those friendships there that you know. And I think about Ernie and I think about Orville and I think about others that I knew that I was there that have been inducted. And even though I'm not connected to them, and I'm connected to them. And I think, I don't know, for me, it's a real honor. It's a, I think it says something about, I don't know if you just get in because of your sports. I think you get in because of your character as well, and how you comported yourself while you were at school, and how you kind of live your life. And I think that, I think Orville, I listened to one of the things that he said, and he was talking about family and friendship and that tie that, and how you, I'm babbling a little bit, but how that means so much to you. And listening to him put it in those words really helped me kind of internalize, okay, what do I think about that? Do I think the same thing? And, you know, he talked about the cafeteria workers, and I remember them because I would not eat a salad when I came to Campbell. I was like, it's green, that's rabbit food, you know. And over time, you know, those ladies are like, you got to eat your greens, you got to eat a salad. And so it was just, you know, having those memories when he talked about that, I'm like, I remember that. I remember, you know, those things that happened in the cafeteria. And I remember those, you know, it was so small, and you didn't feel like you were just some kind of number in the cafeteria, or even in when you went to chapel. I sat next to Pip, I don't know how much, in chapel, and he would sing and I'd sing, and, you know, I don't know. You have those things that I go back and I look, and I'm kind of like, okay, these are things I remember. And then with Orville and Ernie talking about things, it brought a lot of memories back. And I think that's, I'm babbling, but that's what Campbell means to me. I think it being in that place that was so special and so warm. And we talked about the pickup games, the basketball games and stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, that stuff, you don't get to do that at all these big universities. You know, you got to schedule your time in a facility or whatever. And we just show up and start playing, you know. And so I know y'all beat up on me, but, you know, it's kind of...
Now, Leanne, you remember it differently than this guy does, because back in the day in Carter Gym, you know, the basketball players would be in there playing, you know, the both men's and women's teams, and pick, you know, and they would play pickup off season, and sometimes they would need an extra to join in, or just a regular thing. And I can distinctly remember being in a game, and you were on the other team, and my friend Ward Flenham, who was on the soccer team, I think you schooled him several times, and we were walking to the cafeteria or something afterwards, and he was shaking his head, and he was saying, Leanne Plumbly, she was just getting after it, you know, you know, and it kind of took him aback, but there was, you know, yes, if I were to go to, you know, if I was going to NC State back in the 80s, I would not have been able to go play pickup ball with Thurl Bailey, but Clarence Greer let me take the ball out and throw it into him after a made basket or something like that, just because they needed somebody else. And that was a very special time. But make no mistake about it, this All-American track athlete could hold her own all over the place in Buies Creek.
Well, it was fun.
And I've got to ask this, Leanne, if you've ever thought about it, because as you were telling some of these stories about getting your job on Capitol Hill, and then racing bicycles, and in your first big race, you end up in this huge pile up, and you're all beat up. But I've just got to think, you know, playing the football in the yard and the ball growing up, and then of course, you know, if you were falling down in the end zone and scratching yourself on the sidewalk or the driveway and then running into a holly bush, you know, that I guess that prepared you to deal with the blood in the bike race.
Probably. I think it's as I said earlier, you know, it's the way we were raised. You know, you start something, you finish it, you know, you're tough, you don't quit. And then there's the whole competitive thing with, you just want to beat somebody, right? So that's the fun part too. And it's kind of funny. I remember this, I don't know why this just came to me, but there was a race out in Wilmington, and I raced in the women's race. And I trained with all these guys in Raleigh that were really accomplished cyclists. I mean, some of them like age group national champions and this kind of stuff. And so they wanted me to race in the men's race with them. And the reason they wanted to is because they really didn't like this other team, I think. And so they always told me when the attacks were going to be coming. They're like, okay, be on my wheel. This is what we're doing. And so that race, I think, was like maybe 50 miles or something. And so I just hung with those guys that I ride with all the time. And we ended up finishing, and I was like, I don't even remember. I was like in the top 20, let's say. But it's because I'd been, you know, they kept telling me everything they were going to be doing. And when we got done with the race, all they could do was go over and just kind of like tell these guys that they'd gotten beaten by a girl. And that was, it wasn't because, you know, they told me everything they were going to do. I don't know how many times I would have a hand on the back of my saddle that would push me into place, you know, and it's, they just wanted you to be there just so you could beat, you know, somebody. And so that group of guys were just, and there were some women there, but most of the women that were racing at that time that were in North Carolina were over at Chapel Hill. And several really good riders over there. And so I was one of the few women that raced with these guys, but it was always that fun, you know, kind of thing that they just, it's fun to beat people, right? So that's, you want to win.
Finally, Leanne, I've enjoyed our conversation so much today, but can you put into words how Campbell University and the Buies Creek community impacted your life?
I think that being away from home is something that I was comfortable with, you know, as going to camp for so many years, but having that small family style, you know, I babysat for a number of professors. I babysat for Coach Tolsman, for some folks in the English department, and, you know, having those connections to another family, I don't think I would have had the same experience at a larger school. So even when I would come back to campus, I felt, even after I graduated or I had finished my degree, I wanted to stay. I was just a few credits away from getting a communications degree. So I stayed and just took some more courses and lived on campus. And I don't know if I could have done that somewhere else where you just fall in and people take you in and they're just kind of like, oh, you're going to be here for the summer. Well, here's a little job for you, or here's this or that. I think it impacts my life because it fit with where my life was. It was, you know, I was raised a Christian and I was raised with faith. And I think having chapel and staying in touch with that and having a church home, and having people around you that nurtured that in you and supported you. I don't know if you get that in a larger institution, but I felt very supported. And I think that I was able to support others as well, but I think it's just that whole idea of family and really feeling like you belong somewhere instead of just kind of floating through somewhere.
I'm Stan Cole. And our guest today on Tales from the Creek has been All-America track athlete and Campbell Hall of Fame member, Leanne Plum Mann. Thank you, Leanne, for sharing your Tales from the Creek.
Thank you, Stan.